From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly about her Freedom Rider column this week, Obama versus Trump. And I like the little illustration where they're in a marathon race and Obama's handing off what should be the, you know, the usual baton, but it's actually a stick of dynamite.
Yes. Well, that's, you know, that's the continuity of power in this country. And making the point that things don't change very much. But what has changed is the way Obama's defenders, of whom there are many, and not just Democrats and liberals, but the corporate media, don't want to admit how much Donald Trump has stayed with Obama-era policies. So President Trump just returned from a visit to – he went to Saudi Arabia and Israel and to Brussels and to, I believe it was Italy, NATO summit, G7 summit. And it's very interesting that, like every president before him, Barack Obama was a huge backer of Saudi Arabia. And during his presidency, sold more than $100 billion in weaponry to that country, much of which has been used the past 2 years in this devastating war on Yemen, where people are now starving to death and there's now a cholera epidemic. And but Trump is also announced a new weapons deal with Saudi Arabia, which is not a surprise. But, for example, a New York Times editorial pleads with Trump to help save Yemen and acts as though Obama didn't do the very same thing. They briefly mentioned Obama, but they tried to say that he, you know, was trying to – he withheld some weapons from them the last couple of months in office so he could look good on his way out the door. For almost 2 years, Obama backed this policy and this horrible war, which has turned into a war of extermination against Yemen. People are starving because of a blockade. Saudi Arabia is bombing them. His UN ambassador, Samantha Power, I don't know why, she thought no one would notice, but she posted on Twitter that she was concerned about attacks on civilians in Yemen, as if nobody would notice that as his UN ambassador, she too was in favor of this policy. But it's a bigger issue about the role the president of the United States played and their relationships with the ruling class around the world. That's why, and Obama was in Europe at the same time. He had a, what is can only be described as a campaign appearance with Angela Merkel.
Right.
It's not called that, but she's running for re-election, and he, you know, endorses Macron in France, and he endorses her. So he's not going to disappear anytime soon. But I think it's important that these hypocrisies be pointed out.
Yeah, and there's plenty of them. Let's start with right next to this in the sidebar at the top of featured this week at BlackAgendaReport.com, a piece entitled "Good Thing the U.S. Doesn't Interfere in Other People's Elections." And there's a video of Obama endorsing Macron, a French bankster, for president.
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
And then the campaign appearance with Merkel, which also,
yes.
He's there, by the way, you know, essentially campaigning for the Democrats for next year by trying to upstage Trump on his first trip to Europe. And, so you ran down these things. And in the lead to your piece this week, again, it's the Freedom Rider column, Obama versus Trump. President Barack Obama sold Saudi Arabia record amounts of weapons, joined its murderous war in Yemen. And you were talking about starvation. It was a year ago, I think, the UN said there were 9 million people that were on the brink of starvation. And they haven't been getting any food, so we don't know what's happened there, but really bad things. Interfered in European elections by supporting Merkel and Macron. And yet, the corporate media pretends that the stuff that's going on right now really is Trump, and they're beating him for it at the same time that they're supporting Obama as he continues it.
Sure. And he also last year he weighed in on the Brexit vote.
That's right.
The UK.
Yep.
He had a public event with the then Prime Minister Cameron and urged people in Britain to vote against Brexit. It didn't do much good, obviously.
Because right. Well, actually, that was one of the things. That was one of the markers that told me that Trump had a real solid chance of winning was that Obama called, I mean, the entire political establishment in the United States was calling for voting Brexit down, and it failed.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that should have been a sign that Hillary Clinton was in trouble. But in any case, these hypocrisies about Trump really became obvious during his this trip to Europe. And I think it's important to point out, you know, it's pretty clear that presentation is everything. Obama got away with doing some terrible things because he knew how to make friends with the media. Corporate media loved him. They still do. He knew how to make the right impression. So you can get away with, it's pretty clear, you can get away with almost anything if you give the right impression, as opposed to Trump, who always gives the wrong impression.
Right.
So Trump goes to the NATO summit in an effort to elbow his way to the front for the photo op, and he really does, and, you know, half shoved the president of Montenegro out of the way, but which I you know, I don't want anybody pushing me out of the way, so I don't want to say that's okay, but I think it's important to point out who and what NATO is. NATO is not some wonderful organization. NATO is the outpost for U.S. imperialism. There's no need for NATO. Originally, for the first almost 50 years of its history, NATO was supposed to be a counterpoint to the Warsaw Pact. Well, after the Soviet Union collapsed, after Gorbachev willingly just removed thousands of troops from East Germany, there was no need for NATO. But instead, it hasn't gone away. Not only that, it's expanded. And some of those Eastern European countries are now NATO members and EU members. So there's continued encroachment and provocation of Russia. So this is not some wonderful organization. They were a part of the destruction of Libya. And I will never forget, after Gaddafi was murdered, after that country was taken over by jihadists who were supported by the U.S. and their Saudi Arabia again, the U.K. Prime Minister Cameron and the then French President Sarkozy showed up in Libya in person to gloat and to dance on Gaddafi's grave. So, you know, NATO is not some wonderful peace-loving organization, just the opposite. So I don't care if, frankly, they're offended by Trump or they don't like him or they think he's stupid or who are they?
Right.
You know, and I don't think one has to be a supporter or a defender of Trump to say that. This is an organization. NATO should be opposed by people who want peace and who want the U.S. to get out of the business of interfering in other countries. And speaking of Montenegro, their new NATO membership is controversial. Half the country apparently don't want it.
Right.
So
you have that condition on the ground. And by the way, NATO is held out as one of the agencies of democracy for Europe, and you have this fundamental contradiction with the newest member, Montenegro, that at least half the people don't want to be a member, and yet it's a member. And then when they get there, Trump shoves the guy out of the way. You know, the contradiction that bothers me, or that certainly has my attention, is this one, which is the anti-war movement's view towards Trump when you have NATO as a central organ of U.S. imperialism and militarism, Trump campaigning, at least, saying it's obsolete, we should make the people, the other members, pay more, which, of course, means the people in those countries will be in the streets because they're already, you know, suffering from a condition, of all kinds of economic distress. And instead of saying, yeah, we're with that, they're saying oppose the Trump agenda, as if that's not a part of it. And so the kind of coverage that happened at this NATO thing could have been different at least on the left, where people could have been pointing to the contradictions and encouraging them.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's very disheartening that people are focused. This is a problem with being focused on Trump as a person.
Right.
Because so it's easy to condemn some of his many of his behaviors and many of the things he's doing domestically. But that does not mean that we have to close our eyes and, and pretend that NATO isn't what it is, that it doesn't do the things that it does. Right. And it's an opportunity to rethink what kind of country we want. We should have a country that frees itself and frees other people from these interventions, from this defense spending, from this meddling in other people's affairs. But the system is falling apart. The capitalist system is under great distress. That's why the Brexit vote succeeded. That's why it's such a nightmare for them for something like this to happen again. That's why Obama met Macron and endorsed him, because if Le Pen had won, she said she wanted to leave the EU too.
Right.
So they want to make sure that the UK is the last one that that tries that. That's why they're being punished and being told to pay huge sums of money, because they the people dared to leave. So we can see how important it is for the ruling elites to try to hold this together, for former presidents to be sent around the world to try to prop up their partners in crime, for a president who has a different worldview to be condemned so much. And so now we see Trump saying what he had said before. He thought it was interesting, his worldview. It isn't mine. You know, it sounds just like a businessman. I don't want to pay more than the next person.
Right.
So he wants other countries to pay for NATO. I don't think that's the point. But this is why they see him as a danger, because he's threatening to upend many things that are important to the ruling classes. There's no TPP because he won the presidential election. He already killed one trade
That's
deal.
Right.
He already was backing Brexit. He killed that, damaged the EU. Now he's talking about this, you know, put America first, which his supporters, the people who voted for him, want. But America can't be first if its main goal around the world is to prop up this system. And I'm not saying that those things are good, or if he says something I agree with, it's not for the same reason. We don't have the same politics. But it's important to know why he's being opposed. He's not being opposed for the things I think he should be opposed for. He's proposing huge cuts in social spending. People are being told they have to work for food stamps when many working people are on food stamps already. We're being told that Medicaid is going to be cut. This attempt to get rid of Obamacare is going to hurt millions of people. His attorney general wants to turn back the clock and increase incarceration. So there are many reasons. I think one of the reasons he won was because of voter suppression in some key states. But those aren't the thing. It's interesting. Those aren't the things that the New York Times, for example, takes him to task for. They'll take him to task over continuing policy in Saudi Arabia that was firmly part of Obama's policy.
Right. And Bush's and Clinton's. And
going back. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Decades.
Yeah. So, in my opinion, one of the central problems that's really being highlighted here is the tendency of people in this country to look at personalities as the motivators of history instead of processes. And when you're looking at politics, at looking at individuals rather than policy as being the point. So it isn't someone's position on or policy on this matter or that matter that you either support or oppose them on that particular thing, but this good person or bad person who I either support or oppose, period, with no nuance, no dissection of. So if I gobble together a whole bunch of things that make you think I'm a nice guy, and in the middle of it nest, say, World War III, you can't oppose me, okay? And where, yes. On the other hand, if I have some things that make me a really ugly guy, like a full-page ad in 1989 calling for the execution of some innocent children, and yet I'm going to stop World War III, I have to be opposed. You know, it's insane because people are not looking at individual aspects of it. This is across the political spectrum. It has, you know, Chuck Schumer is doing exactly the same thing you're talking about the New York Times doing, for example. They want to shut down the Senate on over this thing and that thing, but they're not shutting it down over voter suppression. They're not shutting it down to force Medicare for all. They're not shutting it down to stop wars, etc.
Yeah, and you know, Obama is the master of that. The absolute master. And it shows, frankly, the importance of making this good impression, because you can you can get away with a lot more. So we have, as Glenn Ford says, the Democrats are not the lesser evil. They're just a more effective evil.
Right.
So that, for example, this week, Trump says he's going to announce whether the U.S. will continue to be a party to the Paris Climate Agreement. And certainly, we need to cut fossil fuel production.
Right.
There's been great damage done to the world. The world is getting warmer. There are places already in great distress.
No doubt.
So we should stay. The U.S. should stay in the climate accord. But let's talk about the climate accords.
Right.
It's not as good as advertised.
It's terrible, actually. It's not going to stop climate change.
No.
Here's the shiny thing over here. Get worried about this instead of pushing for something to stop climate change.
Yes, it actually permits the world temperature to rise.
Right.
2 degrees C, which doesn't sound like much, but that's the difference between having normal temperatures and having a drought.
Right.
Generally, in some part of the world where people are already hungry, so this climate agreement is not as advertised. I think it would be a mistake not to take part in it. At least puts the world on notice that there is some intent, but Obama expanded greatly the production of natural gas. He expanded the production of fracking. That was also in an effort to drive down oil prices around the world, which harmed Russia, which harmed Venezuela, actually harmed the Saudis too, but that's why they do these deals together. It's like, well, we let you get away with cutting the price of oil, so you got to give us a free hand in Yemen or something along those lines. But so Obama expanded fossil fuel production, but because he talked a good game, nobody ever says that. Trump, on the other hand, with all his bluster, this is bad for America, it's bad for American business, he will be pilloried as being against the environment, when actually Obama was the one that expanded fossil fuel production and has made sure that the climate agreements, I think it was Copenhagen before Paris, that the U.S. did not have to pay the countries that are damaged, who made sure that fossil fuel production could actually continue, and gave the U.S. And other countries, all the industrialized nations, a get-out-of-jail-free card.
That's right.
But Trump, if he decides to leave the Paris Climate Agreement, will be the one painted as the only evil party.
Yep. And, you know, we'll go back to NATO for a minute, because you mentioned quite rightly, and this is the thing that's caught my attention in the middle of the entire discussion of NATO going back to, you know, last year. NATO is, and which, by the way, predated the Warsaw Pact. So NATO, when Warsaw Pact came into existence, then NATO's purpose was to defend against it. But first there was NATO, then a Warsaw Pact.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And it was the integration of West Germany into NATO that triggered the Warsaw Pact, because Germany wasn't supposed to be part of any military alignment at the time. But the, you know, Trump's non-commitment to Article 5, which is an attack on one is an attack on all and triggers an obligation to defend, that, you know, his saying, well, maybe we will, maybe we won't. That's the big reason that the elites want Trump out, because there are a million ways of provoking incidents with Russia that are outside the control of the U.S. government that would require U.S. military involvement under Article 5. And Trump has questioned that. For example, when Turkey shoots down a Russian plane,
yes,
and if Russia retaliates, do we have to have World War III because Erdogan's a lunatic? Things like that.
Yes. I was going to use that very example. Turkey is a NATO member, and they brought the world to the brink when they shot down a Russian plane, killed a Russian pilot in Syria last year.
Yep.
This was huge and potentially could have created a war involving all of the NATO members. So this Article 5 is, again, it's something presented as being wonderful, and it is not. Trump, now, you know, it's a funny thing, this term populist, that he's this label that has been stuck on him. I'd say he's more of a nationalist than a populist, which a term I also connect with some left wing movements here. But anyway, his nationalism is I'm not going to say it's necessarily a good thing, but these alliances with other countries are not necessarily good things either. And after the meetings, Merkel said publicly that Germany can't depend on the United, or Europe can't depend on the United States, and we're going our own way. And, well, so what? I don't see why that's necessarily a bad thing. It might make it less likely that there will be interventions of the sort I mentioned before, destruction of Libya, attempt to destroy Syria. These were NATO projects. And I'm not going to say that those things can't happen again, but those are the results U.S. involvement in NATO. So I think this is an opportunity to start questioning things we've always accepted. And when people hear the word NATO, they think it's something good, and it is not. So especially people who call themselves anti-war, who say they're on the left, it's time to rethink all of these things that have been accepted.
Yeah.
That should not be.
Agreed. You know, I think people have a conception of nationalism and internationalism as being like in varying degrees of a spectrum, nationalism on one pole, internationalism on the other, and then exceptionalism, which has been the declared policy of the United States for decades, somewhere in the middle, in other words, to the left of nationalism. And when you're talking about, let's say Trump talking about America first, that implies others, first among others, where when America is exceptional, it's the only one in the room.
That's true.
And so, you know, just conceptually, which side of nationalism is that on in relation to, you know, international worker solidarity, whatever concept of internationalism you have, whether it's anarchistic or socialist or whatever, if that's on the other pole and nationalism is on a pole, where is exceptionalism on that, you know, on that line?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that Obama used to constantly talk about America being exceptional.
Exactly.
And the world not being possible without America. It was really quite sickening to me. And it was among other things that he could get with, he was saying that a Republican could not. Mm. But yes, to say that a country is exceptional is to make it the only country, or put it far above other countries. But it's something he was never called out for saying. And so you make a very good point, because it was also a way of saying America, if not first, America the only. Right. So I don't know why people are so affronted by Trump when he asserts that America, he should put America's interests, as he perceives them, above those of other countries. You know, the Obama administration, Obama's doctrine basically was, you know, sovereignty of other nations just didn't matter. There was no such thing. America could do whatever it wanted to do and could decide if a country was going to live or die. And but, you know, that's what happens when you're the polished, well-spoken guy. You get points for doing things that are really, really awful.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking of this, you know, I'm sort of developing it over the last few weeks, really, myself. But looking at exceptionalism as the ideological framework for hegemony, as opposed to, you know, Trump's America First as the ideological frame. I mean, we're talking, in Trump's case, certainly bourgeois concepts, okay? You're looking basically, he's the president of this particular, you know, corporation or whatever. His job is to go in there and get the most he can for us, America First. That's what he ought to be saying. The other ones, it's almost even pre-feudal, back to Romans, it's imperial. That, you know, we are the only civilized, you know, nation on the planet, really the only nation on the planet, and it is our fate to, you know, bring this to the rest of the world. And I don't know, when you have Russia, China, and others that are standing in the way and they have nuclear weapons, that doesn't really go anywhere constructive, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it also, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking of the doctrine of manifest destiny,
right?
That America is destined to run the world. And by varying degrees, American presidents all accept that to be true. For Trump, it's America will do what it wants to help his people as he sees helping them. And for Obama and others, it was just, we're going to be in league with other powerful countries. And if you run afoul of us in any way, shape, or form, you can cease to exist. And yet one is being upheld as something enlightened and the other is condemned as being backwards and retrograde. But, you know, you can see how quickly things turn in this country. We, you know, they always talk about state-run media in Russia or some other place that we're not supposed to like. But look at our media. The New York Times will literally lie on Obama's behalf in an editorial in order to make Trump look bad and hide the things that he did for, in the case of Saudi Arabia. I remember when the last king died, the current king is, I think, been in power 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
And Obama was on a state visit to India and cut his trip short to make this pilgrimage to Saudi Arabia and see the king. And he brought Condi Rice with him and other Republicans with him just to make sure he knew that America was still our friend. But that has just been disappeared. And you can't find, you have to have remembered these things yourself.
Right.
Or know where to find the information, because that information has, it's too inconvenient now.
Yeah, I mean, you close this by saying, first of all, Obama will keep showing up for his friends. He's still working for the Western oligarchs who want things the way they've been. And that his acolytes are continuing to lie about his relationship with Saudi Arabia. But Obama's second act won't work unless some very big lies are served up. And you're describing even some lies of omission.
Sure. Lies of commission, lies of omission, but the goal, and that is why he keeps going on, he keeps talking about fake news, because the corporate media does not have a monopoly, thanks to the internet, does not have a monopoly on information. And they have to make sure that we don't remember that he paid homage to the new Saudi king. And so that's why that's a favorite of his now, fake news, fake news, fake news. It's don't believe your lying eyes. Just look at me and listen to me. And that's why he's not going to go away.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. Her column this week, Obama versus Trump. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.